Welcome to page 50. We're going to wrap up our study of Revelation here on this page. I know we've been in Revelation for a couple of pages now, right? But again, it's one of the more misunderstood books of the Bible. And so it feels like, especially when we're looking at it from a Catholic perspective, which it's not easy to find a lot of Catholic representation talking about the book of Revelation. It's a little bit more mainstream. If you Google Revelation to find a lot of different Protestant answers in theology, I just thought it might be worth it. So let's do a, what's it called, victory lap with our last little page here, the Catholic meaning in the book of Revelation. And specifically, I'm just going to walk you through a couple of different lenses, if you will, for how to kind of view this book. And then at the bottom, we're going to talk about all the covenants of the Old Testament and how they peek through in the book of Revelation. Very satisfying. It's like a nice epilogue. It's like, yes, God thought of everything and he tied it up. Nice and tidy. Okay, so Catholic meaning. First lens, there's going to be three lenses. Well, no, there's going to be two lenses. I apologize. The first lens is the Mass, and the second lens is going to be human history. Okay, so the first lens, the Mass. If you go through the book of Revelation looking for the Mass, you're going to find it. Okay, this is where the early church, from this vision of John, got a lot of the ideas to structure the Mass. We already had the Liturgy of the Word and the Liturgy of the Eucharist. That was already laid out. Obviously, we take a lot from the old Passover with the idea of the introductory rites, the proclamation relates to that second cup of Passover, that's remember what God has done for us, and there's a teaching, and we remember, and we read the old readings, and then of course there's the celebration of the Eucharist, and then there's, from the Great Commission, the go out, be out the door. But every little thing in the Mass, honestly, is from the Bible. It's so scriptural, and most of it comes here from the book of Revelation. We see incense, we see candles, robes that the priests wear, bowls, the smells and bells of the Mass, if you're familiar with that concept, smells and bells, all the things that we see, everything that we touch, even down to our body posture. We're up, we're down, we're standing, we're kneeling. We're trying to communicate. The church is trying to communicate to your body, to your senses, that something strange and unusual and fantastic is happening here. And they do it based on Revelation. Jesus is the Lamb. We eat his flesh. Protestants notably, understandably, don't connect this to the Mass. And so the fact that all of these liturgical things are happening in heaven, there's no way for us to participate in them. Yet we Catholics, we participate in the liturgical actions of heaven by the Mass, by eating the flesh of the Lamb, by doing the new Passover. Okay, so that's really the first lens. The second lens is a little bit more involved. It's called the human history lens. So there's a way to see the book of Revelation through the past, through the present, and through the future. The past is really what we mostly talked about, that this was written in about 68 AD about events happening in about 70 AD. Okay, this was a past book prophesying past events. So the great evil city called the harlot is Jerusalem. It was destroyed by Rome in 70 AD. Plagues and catastrophes preceded that, mirroring the plagues happening on earth with the liturgical actions in heaven. It's a symbolic destruction of the whole universe, but in the past, it was literally just a destruction of the temple. Okay. In the same way that the book of Revelation introduces a new bride after the harlot is destroyed, the old temple of Jerusalem is replaced by a new bride, a new temple, the church, replacing the old stone temple with the temple of the hearts of all the believers, as well as, of course, they build churches. But the churches are not quite the same thing as the temple because churches are all over the place. Anyways, we won't go quite into that. But this is a vision of, yes, what did happen, primarily what did happen, and of course it's a vision for end times. Now, just a word of warning here, I'm not sure if you've run into this yet, but Protestants often identify the whore of Babylon with the Catholic Church. And they identify this as only about end times, how the whore of Babylon will be destroyed by the beast at end times. Now, we're not going to go into a whole explanation of why that's not the case, but the main thing I'll say is just that the Roman Catholic Church, by that name, Roman Catholic Church, was not called that until way later. Christianity, people of the way, believers, they were all the same thing up until the Protestant Reformation, really. And so there were heresies, but the church combated them together. So if this is happening in 68 AD, there is no Roman Catholic Church to speak of. Like, the Roman Catholic Church is Christianity. They're all the same thing. There's no distinction. And it's not called Roman. So the connection to Rome isn't really there yet. The connection to Rome happens when Peter goes to Rome and, kind of establishes that as the place, the seat of his reign, as well as Christianity is legalized in Rome and protected in Rome and stuff. So anyways, it just is like a theory of somebody who hasn't read the book in full, because the book in full clearly states that this is to the churches of the time and it's going to happen soon. And so it doesn't make any sense for it to be about years and years and years in the future and not about the people back then. Okay, so the first lens of human history is really the past. The second is that, yes, it's actually present, too. There's ongoing spiritual warfare in the world. Throughout human history, we can identify lots of different, you know, cities or countries or people acting as harlots or beasts or whatever. And our worship in mass is like participating in heavenly warfare. So when we go to mass, it is doing things. It is pouring out bowls. It is enacting warfare on the evil of the world through our prayer, through our intercession, mostly through the mass. And yes, the church is imperfect. So yeah, even people in the church act like harlots and beasts, sure. But the whole thing is, don't allow the scandal in the church to drive you away from her. If you will not have the bride, then you cut yourself off from the bridegroom. So if you refuse to take the bride because she's imperfect, you're going to miss out on the perfection of the bridegroom, okay? So the way we see Revelation currently is that our mass really participates in the book of Revelation. And then finally, in the future, 675 Catechism of the Catholic Church says there will be coming trials to shake the faith of most believers in the church before the end. There will be one more assault of the powers of the evil. The whole idea that the devil was thrown into a prison for 1,000 years and will be back. We do believe that to be about the future and that it hasn't happened yet. But the thing is, it's unlikely that we're going to be able to recognize what's happening. Like in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, Jesus appeared, he was fulfilling hundreds and thousands of prophecies from the Old Testament. But it's not like the people in real time could tell that. They weren't like, huh, you know, this is reminding me of all these different prophecies going on. It's not really like, they saw it in hindsight. They saw it after he explained it to them. So in the same way, most, you know, people in the church, most priests, most bishops will say, you know, don't try so hard to like map it out and say, oh, this is happening. I wonder if it's the devil back. You know, it's really like, you can see it in hindsight, but it's unlikely that we're going to be able to recognize what's actually happening as it's happening. And it's really not up to us to be concerned about it, because we know how it ends. When we say that, you know, oh, we know how it ends, it's because we know that the devil will come back. I mean, he is present in the world, but like, we know that Jesus Christ is going to win, because in the book of Revelation, we see that it happens. He defeats him, and then the bride is married to the Lamb, and everything's good. So Jerusalem, our heavenly home, is the fulfillment of the Eucharistic covenant, okay? Even now, even the Eucharistic covenant with Jesus is going to come to an end, because we're going to have a more perfect one in heaven. The great wedding feast between heaven and Jesus will be at the end. We are temples of the Holy Spirit. We are the bride. We are the church. It's going to be the marriage of us and Jesus. And yeah, that's really that. That's it. The past. This is about the past mostly. This is somewhat relevant to the present. And yes, there are parts of it that are relevant to the future. But hopefully after taking this little course, you'll be able to say to, you know, your average Joe on the street, the book of Revelation is not primarily about scary, apocalyptic, crazy things about to happen to us in the future world. We shouldn't be cowering in fear of this book. We should take it for what it is and say, yeah, this is going to happen again. But we're not afraid, because we cling to Jesus. Okay, now let's take a peek at the covenants of the Old Testament. There's 5 covenants in the Old Testament, and then, of course, Jesus' covenant in the New Testament. So let's just see. They're all here in Revelation. The Adam covenant. Now, of course, we've got the new Adam and the new Eve, Mary and Jesus. Jesus and Mary, respectively. And the Revelation 22, we see the new river of life and the new tree of life, which are described in Eden, okay? As we know, the new tree of life is also a different analogy for Jesus, because he's the fruit that hangs on the tree, that if you eat him, you will have eternal life. Okay, but at this point, the tree of life in Revelation 22 is described as an actual tree with actual fruit. So it's like a new Eden, the new Jerusalem. Okay. In Revelation 4:3, we see Noah's covenant shouted out to. A rainbow encircles the throne. The mercy of God, the fact that God's never going to flood the earth again, the promise that Noah covenant is there on the throne of rainbow. The Abraham covenant, Abraham is promised land, a people, and a worldwide blessing. And from Abraham's line comes the nation, the Israel, the 12. Jacob doesn't get a covenant. So the fact that the Israelites are the great nation is from Abraham's covenant. So think of Abraham, you actually think about the 12 tribes. Okay, so there's 12 gates on the New Jerusalem in Revelation 21, 12 through 13, and the 12 tribes of Israel are all accounted for there. His names and descendants are the nation Israel. And yeah, they're part of it, as well as those 24 priests we saw at the beginning. 12 of them are the patriarchs, 12 of them are the apostles. Moses is, there's 12 foundations to the New Jerusalem made of stone, and they're the same jewels that Moses used to make the Levitical breastplate. So we see the same jewels mentioned here in Revelation 21, 19 through 20, that the priests would have worn according to Leviticus. And number five, David. David is the most obvious one because David ruled Jerusalem, and this New Jerusalem is called the Holy City Jerusalem. That's the name of the city David chose, okay? It's Revelation 21, 2, as well as he shouted out the root and the seed of David, the bright morning star is the name given to Jesus, Revelation 22, 16. The whole Davidic covenant is that the Son of God will reign forever and sit on the throne, and here is Jesus finally doing that. Lastly, we'll shout out Jesus' covenant, the only one in the New Testament, on the 12 foundations of Jerusalem, are the names of the men who entered into covenant with Jesus as priests, representing the new bride, the Eucharistic covenant. Okay, Revelation 21, 14, the names of the apostles are written there. Which must have been crazy for John. Just think about it. John is having this vision and he sees his own name in heaven inscribed on one of the gates of the New Jerusalem. He's like, what? Like, this is crazy. Like, it must have been easy to die after that, right? I mean, I guess he wasn't martyred, but still. Okay, so hopefully that felt like a comprehensive and insightful view of Revelation. Now we're going to kind of shift gears and go into talking about the sacraments. See you on the next page.